Court will now hear United States against Martinez. Counsel for the defense.
May it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Kathleen Kavick, and I represent the appellant in this case. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for my rebuttal.
Granted.
I'm here today to address credibility spillover when an appellate testifies to all charges, and some of those charges are later dismissed on appeal. Appellant asserts that when assessing credibility, one does not compartmentalize that credibility determination. The case most on point is United States v. Hay, where First Lieutenant Hay testified at trial, admitted one charge of adultery, but denied another. When one of those was dismissed on appeal, the last one was thrown out. This was a case in front of members, but there was a proper instruction in that case. Yet the court dismissed the second charge due to the significant risk that the evidence of the adulterous affair with the captain that was dismissed was the deciding factor in that case. Secondly, in Hay, this court also noted that special findings may well prevent spillover in a case such as this.
Counsel, could your client have requested that the charges be severed? I mean, I understand that charges are normally supposed to be tried in the same court-martial, but wouldn't the same risk of spillover have been apparent at the time of the court-martial?
Yes, Your Honor. He could have requested, but he did not.
So should we deem that the issue is waived, or should it be that whenever a military judge finds out after the fact that some sort of evidence is thrown out, that then we'll undertake the kind of inquiry you're asking us to undertake here?
Yeah, there was no evidence in Hay that there was a motion to sever as far as appellant is aware, and so that should not be dispositive in this case.
Okay, well, at least, and again, I understand that our system is different, but I mean, generally, this sort of issue in a judge alone trial in the federal system is basically just deemed to be a post hoc argument for severance that they should have asked for, didn't ask for at the time of the original trial.
But, Your Honor, your question is whether or not it was waived by appellant, or that should this court consider that it was not raised by appellant? Which one of those is actually your question?
Both.
Again, relying on Hay, there's no indication that that was a consideration before this court, and so that's what appellant asserts, that that should not be a consideration.
How is this case different than any other judge alone trial where there's more than one charge?
This case is significantly different because of the weight of the government's case on the first two specifications as to marijuana use, Article 112 Alpha. The strength of the government's case on those two charges was so significant, and then in light of appellant's testifying and his explanation, in light of the weight of that evidence, significantly impaired his credibility. The remaining evidence on the government's behalf as to the remaining charges was very weak, Your Honor. And so that's the difference in this case. Usually when spillover is raised.
So does that mean in any case that fits that pattern, it should be reversed? Any judge alone where the charges have unequal weight in the quality of the evidence, by definition, there's spillover?
We cite again to Hay, where it wasn't a judge alone trial. Appellant acknowledges that fact. But in that case, there were proper instructions. And this court said there's just a significant risk.
Aren't we supposed to presume that the military judge properly instructed him or herself? Isn't that what presuming to know the law is?
This court needs to clarify that issue in this case because it's appellant's assertion that when a military judge makes a credibility determination, or anybody makes a credibility determination, all of the evidence is considered as far as what the witness is testifying to. So in this case, appellant asserts that the military judge did properly consider all of the evidence from appellant on this case, and that then is a problem. The credibility was so impaired in light of the government's overwhelming evidence as to the first two charges that there is spillover.
Counsel, if the judge properly considered all the evidence on credibility, why is this different from a case in which there are several charges and in which the accused is found not guilty of several charges? Does that mean that the remaining charges need to be thrown out because the evidence considered on the not guilty charges was heard by the members or by the judge?
In this case, Your Honor, there was one charge of which appellant was acquitted. The government offered one witness as to that charge, and that was Private Zalkowski. His own testimony was not corroborated by other government evidence, i.e., when he reported or when appellant reported to the command. That was demonstrated on the record. Conversely, as to the other two charges for which he was convicted, there was no other government evidence absent Private Zalkowski. We have appellant testifying on the stand, admitting that he was present on a drive to San Diego, whereby Private Zalkowski alleged that he smoked marijuana with appellant. And then as to the other charge, the Article 81, the conspiracy charge, appellant did admit to saying something in the context of wanting to party, but not in a drug context. In light of his impaired credibility from the first two charges, that was enough to convict appellant on those charges. And that is a spillover in this case.
Is your argument really that the evidence in the case isn't legally and factually sufficient absent the charges which the CCA got rid of? Because it sounds to me like that's what you're arguing.
In part, yes, Your Honor, it is. But largely due to the credibility spillover.
So should the analysis that we undertake be, could the military judge, in the absence of the urinalysis evidence, have reasonably found this individual guilty of the remaining charges?
Can you repeat that question?
Yes. I mean, so should the analysis that we undertake be, would the military judge, absent the guilty charges on the two specifications that the CCA got rid of, could he reasonably have concluded that the individual was guilty of the remaining charges?
The court's going to have to decide as to what rationale to decide this case, but it's appellant's case that because of their credibility, before the first two charges, it's improbable that an appellant would have even testified at trial, but because he did, and his credibility was so impaired, there were those statements that this court cannot consider. That this needs to go back because of the significant risk of spillover in that case. So in essence, appellant is not ruling out the fact that there could have been legally sufficient evidence in this case, but you can't because it's tainted, because that appellant's testimony is tainted. Does that make sense, Your Honor?
I understand your argument.
What standard or test should we apply? The government cites to Kerr, which is a member's context, and I'm not sure you cite to a particular case. You're looking at the presumption itself to see if it's been overcome. Are you in favor of us adopting the Kerr test for military judge alone spillover, or are you in favor of a flat up, is the presumption overcome, or what standard should we apply, if any?
It seems as though it's not articulated very well in Hay, but it seems that there's a de novo standard there, and that's what appellant would urge this court to apply, insofar as the court reads Hay the same way that appellant does.
Didn't the CCA, after throwing these out, explicitly find that the evidence was legally and factually sufficient as to the remaining charges?
They did, Your Honor.
What weight should we give that?
Not a lot.
Not what?
Again, as I tried to articulate to Judge Ryan, the court cannot rule out, well, first of all, this issue was not raised below as far as the credibility spillover. So the court did not have that in front of them as well. And so that's the primary issue that appellant sees in this case today, and that they did not consider that. So this court should not give very much weight to that.
Well, then aren't appellate military judges, just like trial judges, presumed to know and interpret the law properly?
I mean, they review the entire record, but the legal...
On the base of the entire record, under 66.
They are entitled to that presumption as a matter of law, but this court, because the issue was not raised, would ask that this court review it de novo as the court did in Hay.
Counsel, I'm not quite following the argument on legal sufficiency. If the evidence isn't legally sufficient, we never get to spill over impact.
That is correct, Your Honor.
If we're considering spillover impact, isn't it because the evidence was legally sufficient, but that the spillover impairs the confidence in the verdict by the fact finder?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So in this case, if the evidence was properly considered when the case was tried, what makes it improper at this point?
What makes it improper, Your Honor, is the fact that most of the evidence for which appellant testified to was attacking the first two charges. And so the lack of a cogent explanation for the ingestion so impaired his credibility that spilled over to the remaining charges.
What would have happened at trial if there had been a finding of not guilty on these two charges?
We wouldn't be here today, that's for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
But
on the charges that we're talking about, on the ones that are dismissed on appeal.
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
If there was a not guilty finding on the charges that were dismissed on appeal, what would be the impact on the remaining findings at trial? In other words, if we'd never gotten to appeal and there was a not guilty finding at trial.
If I understand your question correctly, if the first two charges were not dismissed on appeal, where would we stand, essentially?
No, if they had never gotten to appeal, if there had been a not guilty finding on those charges.
On the first two charges.
Right.
So all the evidence comes in just the way it did, okay? All the urinalysis evidence, everything. And then the military judge says, not guilty. So those issues never go up to the CCA. Is that...
Yeah,
right.
I see my time has expired.
You can answer my question and Judge Ryan's clarification. Judge Ryan's helped me out on this.
And
we're talking about a hypothetical at trial where the two charges, they were dismissed on appeal. Let's assume that they were resulted in a not guilty finding at trial. What would be available to the defense at trial at that point in terms of attacking the remaining finding of guilty? The evidence came in.
Not much, because if I understand the question...
Right, so why is it any different on appeal?
Because those specifications were dismissed, and they did ultimately result, in a guilty finding in the first place. We don't have an acquittal, as I think what your hypothetical is getting to.
Right, but if the evidence properly came in at trial, and the members decided that evidence wasn't sufficient or the judge decided that evidence wasn't sufficient for guilt, does that mean that they didn't consider it at all on the other issue? Or do we not know?
They just wanted to find the appellant guilty, from what I understand.
Okay.
If there aren't any more questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court, my name is Lieutenant Justin Dunlap and I represent the government. The question before this court is whether there's improper spillover in the appellant's case, given that the military judge's assessment of the appellant's credibility was based in part on specifications that were later dismissed on appeal. The government's position is, first, the appellant cited no authority whatsoever where this court has recognized the concept of improper spillover in the context of credibility determinations. Second, the context where this court has recognized improper spillover, that being evidentiary spillover, is not present in the appellant's case.
Counsel, as I understand the defense's response to what I was pursuing in the last question, it's that when there's a not guilty finding at trial, you have some sense that the members of the fact finder gave very little weight to the evidence, and therefore spillover is not a significant concern. Whereas on appeal, you're dealing with multiple guilty findings. Now some of them are removed. How can you have the same confidence?
The results should be the same either way, Your Honor. Well, specifically in the appellant's case is tried by military judge alone. There's a presumption that the military judge considered the evidence only for permissible purposes. Military rule of evidence prohibits the military judge from considering evidence on the dismissed specifications when coming to his conclusion of guilt as to the remaining specification. So there is a presumption that the military judge would not have considered the dismissed specifications as substantive evidence of the remaining offense.
And in a members' trial, do we not also apply a presumption that the members follow the instructions? So if they're properly instructed on spillover, we would not presume that they would violate those instructions.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And do we apply the same legal concept when charges are dismissed on appeal?
That's correct, Your Honor. The government would just point out, I think the government's case here is even stronger because it was a military judge alone case. Also, the findings clearly indicate that there was no evidence of spillover in this case, given that the military judge found the appellant not guilty of a December 2001 marijuana use involving Private Zolotowski. If there had been improper spillover, it seems likely that the military judge would have found the appellant guilty as to all of the offenses regarding Private Zolotowski.
And then how would you just address the defense's reliance on Hay?
I think the government's position is that Hay is easily distinguishable. First of all, Hay deals exclusively with evidentiary spillover. The appellant's whole argument here is based on credibility spillover, which there is no foundation for in the law. That concept has never been recognized by this court. Two, Hay was tried in front of members. The appellant's case was tried by military judge alone. And again, there is this strong presumption, particularly in the case of military judge alone, that the military judge has only considered evidence for appropriate purposes.
Right, but that's the same nature of presumption that we apply with members if they've received a spillover instruction. And yet in Hay, my understanding of the argument by defense is they're arguing even though a spillover instruction was given and even though we would normally apply the presumption, it was not applied in that case.
The government believes that on that count, this court should decline to follow Hay in that a proper limiting instruction that is given to the members, there should be a presumption that the members have followed that instruction. And Hay, this court found that the members had not followed that limiting instruction. In subsequent cases, most notably the United States v. Kerr, this court has found that a limiting instruction properly given does create the presumption that the members have properly found it. And that is the presumption this court should apply. And again, given that this case is by military judge alone, that presumption should be strengthened even further.
So in the nature of some recent discussions, it's a super presumption here as opposed to the presumption we apply to members?
I think this court's case law indicates that the court is more ready to apply the presumption in the case of a military judge alone case than in a member's case. The precedent seems to indicate that there might be more concern that there is evidentiary spillover in a member's alone case. The government would simply point out that every case cited by the appellant in terms of evidentiary spillover all deal with members' cases. So clearly this court has had more of a concern in evidentiary spillover cases when the case is tried before members rather than military judge alone.
You cited to Judge Epp on the fact that this judge had found, had acquitted the appellant as one of your reasons for determining there was no spillover. So does that mean if there was no acquittal in a case, the government's view would be there was spillover?
No, Your Honor. That is just one additional factor that further reinforces the fact that there was no spillover. The government certainly would not hang their entire hat on the fact that there was.
What would you be hanging your hat on then in a case where the military judge found the person guilty of everything?
The presumption that the military judge considers evidence only for permissible purposes. In this court, in this case, there is nothing whatsoever in the record to rebut the presumption that he only considered the evidence on the dismissed charges for those dismissed charges, and he only considered the evidence on the remaining charges still before this court on the remaining charges. There is nothing whatsoever to rebut that presumption.
Are you asking us to apply the Kerr test or merely the presumption?
The Kerr test, Your Honor. Applying the Kerr test, first of all, the evidence regarding the dismissed specifications. There was an alternative admissible grounds for that evidence at trial. They certainly came in on the two failure analysis specifications, but they also came in to impeach the appellant's credibility that he had never used marijuana before. The appellant testified at trial that never in his Marine Corps career or before did he ever knowingly use drugs. When the appellant made that claim, the substantive evidence of the dismissed charges was admissible as extrinsic evidence to impeach the appellant's credibility on the remaining offenses that he had never used drugs before. So in terms of the Kerr test, the evidence would satisfy the first prong, that is that the evidence of the dismissed specifications were admissible for alternative grounds. Applying the second prong of the Kerr test, No limiting instruction was necessary in this case, and the reason no limiting instruction was necessary is because this case was tried by a military judge alone. And not to beat a dead horse here, Your Honor, but military judges are presumed to know and apply the law correctly and only to consider evidence for appropriate purposes. And finally, applying the third prong of the Kerr test, the findings indicate that there is no improper spillover. And the reason they do that is because the military judge found the appellant not guilty of one of the remaining offenses involving Private Zolotowsky, this December 2001 marijuana use involving Private Zolotowsky.
What if you are wrong about the admissibility of the evidence that the appellant opened the door and there was no acquittal?
The government's position is that prongs 2 and 3 will get the case to the same result. That is, there is no improper spillover. That is to say, even if this evidence did not have an alternative grounds for admissibility, the fact that it was a military judge alone case, and the presumption that military judges are presumed to consider evidence only for permissible purposes, along with the fact that the findings indicate that there was no improper spillover.
No, I gave you a new scenario, though.
If you could repeat one.
I took away 1 and 3 from Kerr. I'm trying to test whether you're really relying on Kerr or whether this is a case where the government relies on whichever factor in Kerr helps you and then says that's sufficient.
In this case, I gave
you a scenario where you're wrong on the first thing. You can't get that. The appellant didn't open the door. And it was all guilty across the board. So all you have is the presumption that the judge applied the instructions to himself. Do you still win?
Obviously, those are not the facts in this case.
Oh, no, I understand. I understand. But we're looking at what, when we write this, if we write it in your favor, we have to write it in a way that would apply to some other case.
That would make it a much closer call. If the appellant could show there were no alternative grounds of admissibility for the evidence, and there were nothing in the findings to reflect that there was or was not improper spillover, the appellant would have a better argument for spillover. But given that this case was military judge alone, the government's contention is that we could win on prong 2 alone. If it were a member's case, I think it becomes a much closer call. Again, to reinforce the point that every case where this court has found improper spillover has always been in the context of members' trials. Turning to the fact that the appellant cites no authority where this court has recognized spillover in the context of credibility determinations, every case cited by the appellant, most notably United States v. Hogan and United States v. Haye, which the appellant repeatedly referred to in their argument, deal strictly with evidentiary spillover, where proof of one offense is improperly used as proof of another. The appellant is attempting to shoehorn these evidentiary spillover cases into this whole new novel concept of credibility spillover, and those cases simply do not fit. When an accused testifies at trial, it's the duty of the military judge to assess the accused's credibility. Now, if the accused takes the stand and makes what he himself concedes in this case is a highly improbable claim of innocent ingestion, the accused assumes the risk that that statement is going to have an impact on the remainder of their testimony, and there's nothing improper about that. To give the court an extreme example to make the point, suppose there were a case where an accused was charged with two separate larcenies. On larceny one, the accused testifies that he couldn't have committed the offense in the night in question because he was out of the country. Yet the government is able to produce evidence of 20 eyewitnesses saying he was the one who committed the larceny, as well as video footage of the appellant or the accused actually committed the offense. On larceny two, the appellant says, I couldn't have committed that offense either on the night in question because I was at home asleep. It almost goes without saying that the appellant's or the accused's absurd testimony that he was out of the country will impact the remainder of his testimony, and it probably should. There's no prohibition against that. There's nothing in the rules that would require otherwise. In the same way, if the appellant in this case gets up and gives what he concedes is highly improbable testimony that he was the victim on back-to-back weekends of marijuana-laced pizza, that is going to affect the military judge's credibility determination of the appellant. And nothing in the military rules of evidence would state that it cannot.
That would seem to suggest that there is some relationship between evidentiary spillover and credibility spillover. That is, the evidence, your argument is that the evidence on offense X, whether it is used as proof of evidence Y, is different from credibility on X and credibility on offense Y. But if the government's evidence of the credibility of a witness on the first offense is overwhelming, and the evidence of the credibility of the witness as to the second offense is weak or non-existent, if the first offense is thrown out, why shouldn't that affect the question of whether that credibility determination had an effect on the second offense?
Your Honor, there's a clear distinction between evidentiary spillover and this novel concept of credibility spillover. Clearly, the military rules of evidence would prohibit, under your facts, the facts of this case, what is overwhelming evidence as to specification one being used as proof, substantive proof, of the remaining specifications. That is clearly prohibited by the military rules. However, in terms of credibility, the appellant's credibility, when he makes a statement as to specification one, that can impact his credibility as to specification two. But in terms of the government's evidence, if the government puts on clearly credible evidence on specification one, that doesn't have any relation to an unrelated charge in the government's evidence. That is to say, in this case, the results of the 2-year analyses were, the government contends, very credible. That credibility determination really wouldn't have any relation to the government's evidence on specification two, which was just Private Zolotowsky's.
Right. Well, I was asking a theoretical question about what about a case in which it does, in which the evidence of the witness is highly credible on one charge and weaker non-existence on a second, and the first charge is thrown out on appeal.
Under those facts, the members would be able to clearly can believe the witness on one aspect of their testimony and perhaps not believe them on another aspect of their testimony. The government doesn't contest the appellant's claim that fact finders can compartmentalize their credibility determinations, but there's no requirement they do. So certainly there are going to be cases where the fact finder is going to believe all the witness testimony. There are going to be other cases where the fact finder believes part of the witness's testimony and doesn't believe part of it. That doesn't create this concept of credibility spillover.
I understand your answer. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
You have time to briefly conclude.
Yes, sir. In conclusion, the appellant has cited no case where this court has recognized the concept of improper spillover in terms of credibility determinations. In the context where this court has recognized improper spillover, that being evidentiary spillover, is simply not present in the appellant's case. When the appellant took the stand and gave what he concedes is a highly improbable defense of innocent ingestion, he assumed the risk that testimony was going to impact the remainder of his testimony with the military judge, and that was perfectly appropriate. If there are no other questions, the government asks that this court affirm the findings and sentence of the court below. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
government's contention that there is no such thing as credibility spillover is misplaced. In Hay, it was implicitly acknowledged. The term credibility spillover may not have been used, but in Hay, the sole evidence against First Lieutenant Hay was the evidence offered, the testimony offered by the accomplice, as this court deemed it. And in the factual basis is similar to this to the case before us today. Obviously, Lieutenant Hay denied admissions, and then the accomplice, asserted that the adulterous affair had in fact occurred. And the way that the court approached Hay is an implicit recognition, essentially, of the credibility spillover. Further, if this court deems Kerr the appropriate test to apply, the government still cannot win on the third prong. The appellant additionally asserts that this evidence would not have been admissible in the first prong, and that viewing the evidence, essentially what we're dealing with here is rebuttal evidence on the defense case, not the typical 404B evidence that would have been admissible. But if this court actually deems that it was admissible, the government still loses on the third prong because there was, the findings do indicate spillover, as appellant has demonstrated, insofar as appellant acknowledging that he was present and admitting to the fact that he, quote, wanted to party. And so there is spillover as far as the Kerr test.
Can you explain to me briefly what it is you would have had the military judge do at the time of trial in order to prophylactically cure a potential error in the event an appellate court sometime down the road dismissed some of the other charges?
Well, there's indication in the United States v. Hay that special findings would be appropriate to prevent spillover in this case.
Okay, so since we don't have special findings, since there aren't members, what would you have had the military judge do in this judge-alone trial at the time of trial to cure the error that you are claiming today?
Just an articulation on the record as far as that he did not consider any testimony, that the credibility spillover did not apply to the charges for which he, the other charges for which he found the appellant guilty. Does that make sense, Your
Honor? Should the CCA have put in the same magic words? We have dismissed this, these facts. We did not take this into account in assessing the factual sufficiency, the evidence on.
Surely that would have assisted this court, yes, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, are magic words necessary? It may have assisted us. You might not be here. But are you saying you have to use some sort of formulation like that to take it out of this case?
I see, Your Honor, that I'm out of time yet.
Please answer the question.
They are not dispositive. United States v. Hay recommended them, but you can still get to the spillover vis-a-vis the findings in this case. So does that answer your question?
Thank you.
That concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. We thank counsel for both parties for your argument today. The court will stand in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Court stays in recess until 9 a.m.